Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive.
Today we're going way back to 1708.
With the first church in Pembroke.
Wow.
Using their 200th anniversary book as our guide.
Oh, cool. So,
set the scene for us.
Okay.
What was Pembroke like back then?
Well, not quite the picturesque New England town you might imagine today.
More like a,
pretty bleak and arid moorland.
Really?
Barely able to sustain itself.
Wow, and people were traveling all the way to Duxbury for church every week.
I know. Can you imagine?
Every single week, trekking through the woods to attend services.
It's dedication right there.
Talk about commitment.
So they decided to build their own church.
They do.
It was really a natural progression as the village.
What would eventually become Pembroke? You know.
From the tax it started to grow.
The need for a local church became clear.
And in 1708, that need became a reality.
They built a modest little building near a place called Sabbaty Orchard and held their very first service.
I bet that little building held some grand stories within its walls. You have no idea. Did you know they actually auctioned off the pews?
Really?
To raise funds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Prices ranged from 10 to 25 pounds.
A pew.
A small fortune back then.
Oh, absolutely a small fortune.
That's incredible.
Talk about putting your money where your faith is.
And speaking of faith.
The book actually lists all the original pew owners.
Oh, wow.
The founding families, you know.
Names like Jocelyn Crocker, Sol Barker Wadsworth.
Those are some serious Pembroke names.
Right. The pillars of the community.
So they had their church. They had their congregation.
And then came Reverend Daniel Lewis.
Yes. A typical old-style minister, as the book says.
What does that even mean?
Well, picture this.
Lengthy prayers. Even longer sermons and hymns deaconed line by line.
Deacon.
Because instruments were seen as frivolous.
Wow. Church services back then were quite the commitment.
Oh, absolutely. A marathon, not a sprint.
Not exactly the quick pick-me-up some folks are looking for on a Sunday morning.
The book even talks about children getting restless.
Falling ill, even just from sitting through those long, often chilly services.
And to top it off, Reverend Lewis was preaching about the torments of hell.
Yeah, not exactly uplifting stuff.
Definitely kept the congregation on their toes, though.
Speaking of Reverend Lewis, I heard there was an interesting contrast between his fire and brimstone sermons and his actual personality.
It's true.
Really?
Despite the serious sermons, he was actually known to be quite tearful.
No way!
Yeah, loved to share a joke.
Get out of here!
And a true horseman through and through.
You're kidding.
Always out riding, enjoying the countryside.
Wow, what a contrast.
It's amazing what you learn about people.
So he dedicated 40 years of his life to this church.
He did.
How was he paid?
You know, that's a really good question.
It actually fluctuated over the years.
Sometimes a fixed amount, other times tied to the church's finances.
Wow, talk about dedication.
Right.
So under his leadership, the church thrived.
Oh, for sure.
In 1717, they had to expand the building to accommodate the growing congregation.
And just a few years later, in 1726, they started planning for a brand new meeting house.
It seems like that little church by Sabbaty Orchard had really blossomed.
It did.
But I heard there were challenges, too.
There were.
Something about a division within the parish.
Right as the town of Pembroke grew the western part.
Settled by families like the Thomases and the Cushings started to become a hub of its own.
It makes sense that they would want a church closer to home.
Of course.
How did the first church handle that?
Well, it wasn't without its, you know.
Moments.
But they eventually drew a boundary line.
And in 1746, the West Parish was born complete with its own meeting house.
It really was a sign of the times.
How so?
Well, you know, this wasn't just about distance.
It reflected a broader shift in early America.
What do you mean?
The gradual separation of church and state.
As communities grew, they needed their own spaces for governance.
That makes sense.
Separate from religious institutions.
So two churches in one town.
Exactly.
Who became the leader of this new West Parish?
Their first minister was a real firecracker.
Oh.
Reverend Gad Hitchcock.
Wait, Hitchcock?
That name sounds familiar.
He was a true revolutionary.
Was he involved in the American Revolution?
Oh, yeah. Both in the pulpit and in politics.
Oh.
Known for his powerful speeches.
Especially his election sermon delivered right under the nose of Governor Gage.
That took some guts.
You set.
What was he like as a person?
Well, there's this great anecdote in the book.
Picture this.
You're heading back from Boston by stagecoach.
Just you and one other passenger.
Okay.
After a long silence, Reverend Hitchcock, or doctor, as he was often called, decides to break the ice.
He turns to his fellow traveler and says, "Well, I'm so-and-so now. Who are you?"
Oh, I can only imagine the awkwardness.
Right. And the other passenger replies, "Why, sir, I am Gad Hitchcock of Tunk."
Wait, another gad Hitchcock.
I know, right? What are the chances?
And Reverend Hitchcock just bursts out laughing.
No way.
And he says, "While I snum, that's the three homeliest names I ever did hear. And now I think on, you're as homely as any."
Oh my gosh.
What a character.
I love it.
So you've got the West Parish thriving under their revolutionary leader.
But back at the first church, Reverend Lewis's time was coming to an end.
Right. In 1754, Reverend Lewis passed away.
After 40 years.
It was the end of an era.
So who filled his shoes?
His successor was Reverend Thomas Smith, another Harvard man.
But with a very different style.
Well, how so?
Reverend Smith was known for his advanced and liberal religious views.
Really?
A bit of a change from Reverend Lewis's stricter style.
It's amazing how the church, even back then, was constantly evolving.
It's true, reflecting the changing views of its members.
So what was Reverend Smith like?
He was a scholar, quick-witted, known for his kindness.
But he had his quirks.
Oh.
For instance, he was known to have a refined palate.
Okay.
The book tells of a time when he refused to eat a piece of poor apple pie.
I don't blame him.
Right.
Bad apple pie is a crime.
And he was also known to be a tad absent-minded.
How so?
There's a story about him accidentally driving home the wrong horse after a meeting.
The wrong horse?
Didn't even realize it until the next day.
That's hilarious.
But all in all, Reverend Smith brought a period of relative peace.
And intellectualism to the first church.
But every church has its drama.
Oh, of course. And for Reverend Smith, that drama came in the form of the famous singing quarrel.
A singing quarrel.
You heard that right.
I am intrigued. Tell me more.
It all started with Reverend Smith's son,
Deacon Josiah,
who, you know, led the hymns.
And the younger members of the congregation were keen to modernize their singing style.
Oh, I see where this is going.
But Josiah, a fan of the old way of deaconing hymns, line by line, put his foot down.
The age-old battle of tradition versus change.
Exactly.
So what happened?
Picture this.
Sunday morning, the air is thick with anticipation.
Okay.
And then from both sides of the church,
the old and new choirs start belting out the hymn.
Wow.
In completely different styles at the same time.
All the chaos.
Can you imagine?
What did Reverend Smith do?
Well, in a moment of pure parental authority,
he stood up and in front of the entire congregation ordered his own son to sit down.
Wow, talk about laying down the law.
It was a pretty effective way to end the quarrel.
I bet it was.
But, you know, this little event actually reflects larger changes happening in society.
How so?
Well, this was the eve of the American Revolution.
And here, even within the church, you had this clash between tradition and progress.
It's amazing how these everyday events can mirror the bigger picture.
Is it?
Speaking of the American Revolution, the first church served as more than just a place of worship, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Remember back then, the church was the heart of the community?
They held town meetings, elections, even those fiery debates about British taxes, all within those walls.
So those pews have seen a lot.
They've seen it all.
And speaking of fiery debates, the year 1765 saw the passing of the Stamp Act.
Oh, boy.
A major turning point in the colony's relationship with Great Britain.
For sure.
Did the good people of Pembroke have anything to say about that?
Oh, they did.
The meeting house was packed to the rafters.
Everyone eager to discuss this controversial new tax. Candlelight, flickering anxiety in the air.
So were they ready to resist?
Oh, they were.
A committee was formed.
And by nightfall, they presented their report. And this wasn't just some politely worded petition.
This was a full-on declaration of defiance.
What did it say?
They called upon their representative to fight tooth and nail.
To delay the Stamp Act.
Until the collective outcry of the colonies reached the king and parliament.
Wow. They recognized this wasn't just a local issue.
Not at all.
This was about the rights and freedoms of all colonists.
Exactly.
Standing united with their fellow Americans.
They were ready for a fight.
So the first church was truly at the heart of it all.
Oh, absolutely.
Witnessing not just religious services, but the birth pangs of a nation.
It's remarkable.
And even as the political landscape shifted, life in the first church continued.
So what happened after Reverend Smith?
Well, he actually guided the congregation for another 20 years after the revolution.
Passing away in 1788.
Wow, he really saw it all. So who came next?
Reverend Kilbourne Whitman took over in 1787.
But his time was short.
Then came Reverend James Hawley in 1798.
But sadly, he too passed away soon after.
It makes you realize that even amidst those world-changing events, life went on.
It did.
And the church was always there.
Always a source of solace and guidance.
So who stepped in to fill the role?
Well, in 1801, Reverend Morrill Allen became their new leader.
Reverend Allen.
Known affectionately as the Old Man of Dancing Hill.
Okay, the old man of Dancing Hill.
There's got to be a good story there.
Oh, there is.
Reverend Allen lived on Allen Farm.
A place known for its lively celebrations.
Lively how?
They had a yearly corn dance and all sorts of merrymaking going on.
A minister who knew how to party? I like him already.
He sounds fun, right?
And get this, he served the church for 40 years.
40 years? That's incredible.
It is a testament to his dedication.
But you said his final years were a bit melancholy.
They were.
What happened?
Remember that trend we talked about?
The separation of church and state.
Well, it was taking a toll on church finances.
Oh, the eternal struggle.
Right.
They couldn't rely on public funds anymore.
And voluntary donations weren't keeping up.
So what did he do?
In his farewell address, he urged his congregation to step up.
To support their church.
He reminded them of their shared history.
The solace they'd found within its walls.
The community they'd built together.
It was a passing of the torch, in a way.
It really was.
Entrusting the future of the church to a new generation.
And you know what?
They took that responsibility to heart.
They did.
The first church continued to evolve.
Weathering storms, both literal and figurative.
What do you mean, literal storm?
I'm talking about an actual storm.
In 1893, a massive lightning strike sparked a fire that ravaged the building.
Oh, no.
The belfry was engulfed in flames.
The clock and organ destroyed.
The ceiling caved in.
That's terrible.
The entire front of the church was in ruins.
I can only imagine the heartbreak.
It was a devastating loss.
But they rebuilt, held their services in the townhouse while their beloved church was restored.
And by 1894...
By 1894, the first church, renewed and revitalized, stood ready to celebrate its bicentennial.
200 years, what an incredible milestone.
It really is.
So who led them into this new century?
That task fell to Reverend Henry, a Westall.
A scholar from Carolina.
A graduate of both Tufts and Harvard Divinity School.
Impressive.
He was described as a practical man with a sharp mind and a big heart.
Sounds like the perfect person to lead them into the 20th century.
He was a remarkable man.
It's amazing when you think about it.
200 years of history contained within the walls of that church.
It's incredible, isn't it?
How many baptisms, weddings, funerals?
How many moments of joy, sorrow, quiet reflection, and fierce debate?
All those lives lived within those walls.
It really makes you wonder what stories those walls could tell if they could talk.
It does make you think.
It's a good reminder that history isn't just something you read in a book.
It's alive. It breathes. It surrounds us.
It does.
It's in the very foundation of the places we call home.
And sometimes all it takes is a deep dive into a single building like the first church in Pembroke to bring that history to life.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure.